Welcome to Love Hate Automate, the podcast where digital dreams dress tomorrow's reality. I'm your host, Dale Parr, and with my weekly guests, we'll be diving into the vibrant world of digital fashion.
Now, this week's guest has a rich history when it comes to the fashion industry. Sylvia Simchik started as a seamstress, but has grown into a leader for innovation and 3D fashion initiatives, certainly at her current brand, Timberland. She's also presented keynotes at Fly Apparel. There's no doubt that embracing change and driving transformation is in the fiber of Sylvia's practice. So I'd love to welcome Sylvia to the show.
Hey, Sylvia. Hello, everyone. I am Sylvia. As Dale said, I am working in Timberland today. I am working in digital product creation team for apparel part of Timberland. But I started my journey in traditional fashion industry. So I started as seamstress. Then I learned how to make a pattern for creation of garments. And I worked as freelancer for a long time, helping small, medium enterprises to create their collection. I basically always worked in product development, and this is my focus. Mm-hmm. And this is where I am trying to put technology and innovation, because I believe that if we want to be closer to our consumers, the only way is to start from the day one. So from the design and product development, and only after think about the marketing, about on-demand manufacturing, about personalization. If we won't be able to shorten our calendars, we will never be able to be close to our consumers.
Yeah, no, totally understand that. That comes all the way back to range planning, right? Doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, you know, a lot of people are thinking that being closer to our consumers is, you know, talking with them, co-creating garments with them. And this is true. But the problem is that if we have time to market as long as 1 year, 2 years, there is nobody who is able to predict the demand or to create designs that will relate to our customers 2 years after. It's just impossible, especially because fashion industry changed a lot. It was like 10 years ago, there were big fashion brands that were creating the trends. Today, it is not like that anymore because people are using social media. There is a lot of social media creators that are creating the trend in real time. So fashion companies, if they want to go with the flow and provide the garments that are trendy, they have to make it much faster. And I strongly believe that technology can help with that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're totally right. It's there's opportunities to be seized, aren't there? And there's risks by having a slow production or calendar, you know, that those risks are excess inventory, obsolescence. I think we've seen that on LVMH's financials this year, you know, $3.2 billion worth of an obsolete provision. You know,
exactly. Let's face it,
LVMH make incredible clothing, an incredible brand or house of brands. They connect with culture using designers like Pharrell and many others, yet they still have an obsolescence problem, you know? So it isn't always about cultural resonance, is it? It's about the right product at the right time.
And then, you know, I read the statistics about the worth of overproduction in fashion industry. And this is something around $500 billion every single year. That is really a lot. And it is what later translate into this Atacama Desert filled with unsold garments. It is, you know, it's not only about money, but also about the sustainability. We are talking a lot about last weeks. And still seems that we have no solution for that, but solution is here. It's enough, you know, to start to embrace the technology, to start to believe that technology can change it. And unfortunately, fashion industry is very traditional industry. And it's beautiful have a lot of artisans, a lot of people that are extremely passionate about the industry, Because at the end, our ultimate goal is to produce physical garments, and we need people which are enough skilled to produce them physically. But it really doesn't make sense to make all that samples, you know, to have processes that are extremely complicated and long, because we can make it faster and we can make it simpler. And in this way, also our people will enjoy more their jobs. Because if you ask your designers to fill Excel sheets over and over and over, this is not what they wanted to do when they studied fashion design. They wanted to design, they wanted to create, they wanted to, you know, brainstorm new ideas, to think about how people will feel with these garments they are creating. And today, this part, it's just tiny, tiny, tiny part of their job. And technology can change it.
Yeah. It's that market alignment piece, isn't it? You know, we're not talking about automating the whole supply chain or the value chain or the artisanal craft. All that needs to be maintained, because all of that is super important to the, you know, the beauty of fashion, the beauty of garments. But it's that connection between the brand and their customer, that market alignment that is lost, because brands still feel they can just push out whatever they want and people will buy it. But that just isn't the case. Culture and trend moves too quickly. And all of that kind of, all that signal detection and data aggregation, data analysis needs to come back into the range planning and design team, so they can actually recognize what people need and then put it into production, rather than working on it a lengthy 2 years, a 1 to 2 year cycle.
Exactly.
Before we move into the kind of body of the show, perhaps Pie Apparel was just a couple of weeks ago. You were there. You were speaking. Maybe you should give us a roundup of what the interesting topics were.
So this year, it was a little bit surprising to me, because I brought a keynote about the importance of people and engaging with people. In my case, internal teams. In order to be able to implement end-to-end digital product creation into fashion. And I thought to be the only one to take this topic. Instead, there was a lot of keynotes that were, you know, talking around importance of people inside all this technology hype. And it was amazing, because it was not that much talks about, you know, numbers, about return on investments, about the strategies, but it was a lot of talks about how we can engage with our people. So with our internal teams, with our external stakeholders, that can be vendors, that can be manufacturers, and with our customers, and how all that people can shape our strategy. So I don't want to call it bottom-up approach instead of top-down, because I believe in, especially in big fashion companies, we need a mix of both, because from top-down, we have strategic leaders that really have broader view around the company. They really understand the business needs and they understand the numbers. We like it or not, but fashion companies have to earn. Otherwise, all that people will lose their jobs. So we can't forget about that. But then if strategic leaders have no information from the very bottom, they are not able to take informed strategic decisions. Because if you say to your people, okay, this is the tool, and from tomorrow you have to use it, they won't.
No.
They will find a way to not to use it.
Yeah.
And this is probably the biggest setback of digital product creation in fashion. It's a lot of fashion companies that are struggling with that. And at the beginning, it seems like, okay, we will put it in their goals, so they will start to do it. They don't. And fashion companies are trying to find solution for that. And this solution is connecting with your people and taking them on board, engaging with them, and, you know, listening their struggles. So this is what you said at the beginning, how technology can solve the real problems fashion industry have.
It's
And those real problems are not only the problems like external, so we are too slow, we are too complex, whatever, but also how to take on board your people. And I believe I can say this was the most important topic during last PI Apparel, and I really loved it.
Yeah, I think that I've heard that. I've heard that narrative, you know, before many, many times, to be honest. Adidas, Burberry, other BS kind of fascias. I've heard that a lot, you know. It's top-down aspirations don't align with what's happening, you know, at the coalface. It's easy to say we want 80% to be designed in 2D, you know, Adobe packages or however, 2D tech packs, and then 20% to be 3D, but not enough time and resources based on upskilling and empowering teams to face that challenge, because it is a challenge, because they're already very busy and already have, you know, a lot of products to develop in the same amount of time. So you're right. If everybody understands what the struggles are at ground level, if people can identify what those where those inefficiencies lie, work together to put in the right set of tools, and that just that benefits the business, you know, it benefits everybody.
Yeah.
So no, it sounds like, sorry, I wasn't able to be at the event, but it sounds like that is a really, really good approach to tackling the suboptimal adoption rates of DPC.
But then it's not easy to implement, because, you know, between talking and then doing, it's quite a long way. And the great thing was that there were actually some ideas on how to do it. There were some interesting use cases from companies that were already able to implement it at least partially. The problem with big fashion companies, and PI Apparel is basically a conference where big fashion companies are showing up and discussing between each other on how DPC implementation is going. It's not easy because they are extremely complex. It's a lot of layers, and those layers are often needed because you can't try to, you know, handle global business having 50 people in your office, or better. You potentially could, but this is not how corporate fashion brands are working today. And we just can't lay off 80% of people, automate everything, use technology everywhere, and then think that things will go further, because they won't. So, you know, I believe the more important thing is not just talking. So we acknowledge that this is important. Now we have to move to dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will be just talking.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Okay. Well, as you know, this show is called Love, Hate, Automate. So I think we'll move into the first section of love. So you're obviously a very experienced fashion professional. You've seen it from, you know, the artisanal side all the way through to the current innovation of DPC and 3D immersion technologies. What is it you love about the industry?
I love that, you know, I was always about sustainability in fashion. I was always about empowering people about the passion. I have a lot of passion for fashion industry. I started to stitch the garments for my dolls when I was 6. So for me, it was like the only way to go was fashion industry. But then I always wanted to be a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, a possibility to, you know, put together passion for fashion and passion for science, passion for technology, it's the thing I love the most. If we talk about innovation in fashion industry, then it is amazing to see how things are changing. It is amazing to think that we really can even imagine how fashion industry will look like after 10 years. Mm-hmm. You really can't say how in 2035 fashion industry will look like, how we will produce the garments, how fashion business models will look like, because those will change in the future thanks to technology. So for me, this, you know, this constantly changing is probably the thing I love the most if we talk about technology in fashion industry. I am not afraid about changes. I love changes. I love to find myself, you know, in new place and just figure out how we can put this puzzle together. So yes, for me, this is the most beautiful thing if we talk about fashion industry today, that it is constantly changing and not like time ago that it took years between the time we started with, you know, designing patterns on paper, and then we started to use 2D CAD software in 80s, and then we started to move to 3D in around 2000, and then we kind of embrace it around 2015, but in 2024 we already have AI that is a game changer again. And I believe that with AI, we will have this game changers, like every single year, something new will happen. And this is super exciting.
Yeah, it's like Moore's Law, isn't it? You know, change is coming so, so quickly, exponential power with a reduction in cost. We just need to understand how to best harness some of these tools, because they do change so, so quickly. But I'm very similar to you. I think, you know, fashion industry, it's been my world for 16 years, and it's a complicated world. Like you say, you know, there's multiple layers when you talk about, you know, from raw materials to product development, production, marketing, everything else. You know, you're talking about hundreds of roles within a company, and understanding how they all intersect and where those processes work well and where they don't work well. That's where technology can help. It can help, you know, resolve some of those inefficiencies. But I'm interested to know, we're talking about AI. I'm interested to know your thoughts on the data dialogue within fashion at the moment. Obviously, AI needs a lot of data. You know, where does it get that data from? You know, first hand, third hand data. What are you hearing on the ground where you are around data?
So I am hearing nothing because the data in fashion industry is I don't want to say funny, but it's kind of funny topic, because we are sleeping on the gold mines of data. There are fashion companies that are here for over 100 years, and imagine how much data these companies have.
Yeah.
The problem is that we are not able to extrapolate this data because they are not properly tagged, because there are companies that, for example, we use PLM systems, the big fashion companies. And yes. I heard and I've seen companies which in their PLM systems have, for example, simple t-shirt tagged in 5 different ways. So how you are able to extrapolate this data? Maybe you are looking for T and then you have 5 T's and you are like, hey, we have at least 50 in this collection. And then you see that they are like T, T-shirt, shirt, T with a 3E. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mess. And, you know, fashion industry is a domain of creative people. Creative people are not always very trained if we talk about properly tagging things, properly naming things. And it's not easy, but we have to start with that. And we have to find the way to quickly tag correctly also the historic data we have, because we need the historical data. Yes, fashion industry has a lot of data, but this data often is not ready to be used for training AI models. Then, of course, another part of data topic is intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And for this reason, I believe most of fashion companies will train their private models that will start with general pre-trained models, and then they will just close it in safe environment and train them again with their internal data in order to be able to preserve brand DNA, in order to be able to have, you know, the, for example, patterns, because there are already models that are training the XF patterns in order to be able mm-hmm. to prompt, I want a long sleeve t-shirt with V-neck, and it will create the XF pattern for this t-shirt, which is for me a kind of game changer. Mm-hmm. So yes, tagging the data, and after that, creation of private models. And I believe this is the future of data in the fashion industry. Then I am talking mostly about product development, but of course we have also a lot of data which is coming from the market, and we have to implement this data to be able to create better designs, to be able to inform better our decisions, to be able to create a collection that really resonates with our customers. We can use this data to co-create design together with our customers or with our manufacturers, because we can't forget that our manufacturers have a lot of knowledge and a lot of mm-hmm. expertise we should to connect better with. Because our manufacturers, yes, we are paying them for the job they are doing for us, but they are our partners. And we somehow forgetting about that for a long time, that we really can co-create the design with them. And this design can be cheaper, easier, and faster to produce. So, yeah. If you ask me if data is important in fashion industry, I believe today it is more important than ever.
Yeah, I agree. But I think it's a really interesting point what you're talking about there with the PLMs and the ERPs. People haven't really recognized the value of tagging. It's just been something that they've been asked to do that perhaps isn't a really strict taxonomy on what tags to use in what scenario. And certainly big systems in health here in the UK, they have specific skills. They're called coders. And their job is to code patient records with exactly the right, you know, defined tags to understand that healthcare is being delivered and testing is being, you know, executed on time. And it's almost like, a similar type of task would need to happen internally to tidy up PLM before it could be, you know, before it can go into a general AI model. Yeah. No, really cool. In life, we have our loves, which we've just been touched on there, but we also have our frustrations. So perhaps this is a good moment to explore what challenges or controversies are in fact frustrating you at the moment, Sylvia.
I think the most frustrating part is misunderstanding between use of AI, generative AI in this case, and 3D in fashion industry. Because I believe today we are at DPC 2.0. When in case of 1.0, we had 3D that we could use. And today we have 3D and AI. And I hear a lot that today with AI, we don't need any more 3D. And I don't believe this is true. And this is not because I work as 3D apparel specialist, so I am using 3D, because I don't really care. I love AI. And if I believed that AI is the way to go, I would go 100% into that. I don't want to say I will forget about 3D, but I will move where I believe it's more relevant to my job. The problem is that today generative AI are just images.
Yeah,
I have seen some promising papers where it can become a 3D, and they will be even able through AI to extrapolate from 3D mesh a pattern that could be potentially ready for production. And I believe this is the future of DPC, but it's not yet there. And the advantage of having 3D asset is that it is containing information. It is containing data we just talked about. And this data are super important. 3D mesh in the future could be a kind of PLM for us. We could have visual PLM instead of having, you know, long PDFs with all descriptions. We could use 3D mesh for that, because this mesh is containing the XF pattern that is exactly the same we can use for garment manufacturing physically. It is using our information about the trims, about the fabrics, about the colorways, and all other information that can be inside this 3D mesh. So it is not the same thing as generated AI-generated image. And I believe we have to talk more about the differences between two, about how two can work together for fashion, and about how it can develop in the future. Because I am completely sure that 3D softwares we are using today in fashion industry will change. They are often too complicated. There is a lot of tools that actually nobody needs, but they are there. So, you know, when first time designer is opening 3D software, it's like, what? And I really have seen these reactions in the past, because they have no idea where they have to start, how they have to start. And it is not only a matter of training that often is missing. It's just, you know, they have a lot of tools that really don't need. We have to simplify the user interfaces of these tools, while generative AI tools seems to be much more easier, because you just prompt in Midjourney or in another a generative AI tool and you have your image. The problem is that these images are often not ready to be produced. Like, it is impossible to produce them physically. Or, for example, if you like the design you generated with AI, and you just want to change the pattern and you want to change it for this particular pattern, it starts to be an issue. So this is where, for example, 3D software is much more better, because you just drop your new pattern and you change the color of the garment. Then another thing that I really hate around technology are AI fitting tools. This is the topic that makes me extremely angry, because there are not fitting rooms.
Yeah.
Fitting room is something that shows you the fit of the garment. And generative AI fitting rooms are basically overlapping over the image of the person, the image of the garment. It is AI generated based on the garment, on a post, let's say it, but it doesn't show the real fit. So it doesn't solve the problem that e-commerce has, because if someone will see this garment using AI fitting room, they will feel, oh, okay, that will fit me great. And then the garment will arrive at their home, and it doesn't fit in the same way. And it's a huge issue. So just...
You know, the tool is there to make the garment and the photograph of the person harmonize. You know, to make it be an attractive visual. It isn't a representation of the dimensions or the proportions or the drape of anything.
Exactly. It's not... human body is three-dimensional. AI-generated image is not. It doesn't take in consideration the curvatures. It doesn't take in consideration the size. It doesn't take in consideration the fit. It's a great solution, for example, for marketing purposes, because you put this garment on AI-generated models and you have amazing images for your marketing, for your e-commerce team. But you can't use it as a fitting room. You can use it as something to play with. Let's try your outfits, and let's try this dress with this jacket and see how it looks like. And this is a nice use case, but I have seen a lot of times calling it fitting room, and it is definitely not. Then maybe in 2 years, the solutions will take in consideration fit. Because if it will be trained on enough data around the fit, around how the same garment is fitting someone which is small size, who is tall, who is short, and who is curvy, who is slim. In this case, maybe it will be able to show the real or approximately to real fit. But today they are not. So for me, it's something that can be dangerous for technology itself, because if people will see it in this way and they will see that it is not the real fit, then they will refuse to use technology, because they will say, okay, I don't want to use virtual fitting rooms. I prefer to buy 5 garments in 5 different sizes and 5 different colors, try them at home, and then send back others. Does it solve the problem with returning? No. It even amplified it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, I think that's totally valid. You know, because we've seen various iterations of using augmented reality for this, you know, and that all looks clunky and jagged and doesn't really flow very well. That seems to be smoothed out recently. I saw Revolution have got an app that I saw last week, and that looks very, very slick. But you do question, how is it gathering its data around dimensions of the garment, dimensions of the individual? What sizes is it recommending? Is there a specific fit that's come from how the creative director would like to see it worn versus how that individual likes to wear their clothing? Some people like fitted, others like oversized. Where are all these data points and recommendations? How are they all being used to provide that virtual trial? And I don't think they are. But like you say, there's a lot of nuance and complexity before that's going to be something that you can trust. Very, very interesting, yeah. So moving on to the final topic, automate. We've covered lots of little bits and pieces so far in this conversation. But automation, you know, I'm using it as a generic term to talk about what innovation do you need, or what innovation have you heard about that's extremely exciting, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years away. You know, perhaps you can tell us about that.
So working in 3D and trying to have one workflow, so using the same mesh from design till marketing proposals, one of the biggest roadblocker from technical point of view that can be automated, and I hope will be soon automated, is going from extremely high poly garments that are created in 3D CAD software to low poly garments that can be shown on the web in real time, but that low poly garment needs to preserve UVs. And this is something that, as far as I know, not yet exists. There are some solutions that are trying to automate it somehow, trying to make it faster, but still haven't found the one I am looking for. So this is my wish, if there is someone from development part of 3D, I would love to hear from you. I would love to talk with some developers and understand if it is feasible, because I recognize that it is not an easy thing to do, but I believe today with AI, it can be really done. Mm-hmm. Today, what I am doing often is to use QuadDraw in Maya and spend hours on making it poly, because zero mesh destroys your UVs. Another kind of solutions destroy the UVs, and I need this freaking UVs to be able to have beautiful garment and add, I don't know, some details on the textures. So yeah, this is definitely my biggest wish in part.
Yeah, I think, you know, you probably speak for many, many designers out there. That conversion from high poly to low poly just feels like you're breaking something that you once spent hours of love and enthusiasm creating. And you're right, brands have all this high poly IP in their archive. If that could be quickly and easily retopologized and deployed into experiences, games, marketing, social, wherever it happens to be, that's powerful. You know, it extends the value and prolongs the life and usability exactly. of these assets.
I think one of the biggest roadblockers for use of Web3 in fashion industry is this one, because if we have to pay the agency to make the low polys, even if we have the garments, the well done 3D garments, but you have to spend time and money on agency, and at the end it becomes a huge cost if you have a lot of garments to work with, and it takes time. Then, you know, for a lot of fashion brands, it's like, because metaverse, it's long-term investment. It's not something that brings you money today. It just creates an awareness around the youngest generation that tomorrow may become your clients. But they are not your clients today because they are too young, because they have not enough money to spend, for example, on luxury brands.
That's right.
So to make it more seamless and easier, and to also, you know, make thrive this Web3 solutions, which are super interesting because it's a new way to engage with your customers. It's a new way to potentially sell your garments in the future. But without this small piece, so going from high poly to low poly in seamless and fast way, it will be very difficult to unlock this part.
But yeah, if you think about it from a strategic perspective, you know, teams of DPC, creators, designers are producing these collections. Yeah, they're going to go to physical production and then enter, you know, the retail market. But if those assets could be retopologized, low poly, placed into games, young people can experience those garments and build a connection with those garments, even though they may not be ready to purchase. That's brand building.
Exactly.
You know, and that's an investment over time. And to be honest, you can probably, from a financial perspective, amortize some of your DPC costs because you're actually using the assets to build brand over 5, 7, 10 years. There are ways to harness this. It's a mindset thing, right? You know, this mindset problem, there's barriers there. All of this needs to be really, really restructured with a model of financial health just by taking some of these steps.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting conundrum. And I think the tools are there. People like you, Sylvia, are doing a fantastic job of sharing all this information with the world. We do need that strategic leadership to be a little bit more open-minded and a bit more, think a bit more laterally about how they can employ them for the financial health of their, and the legacy of their brands.
The connection with the youngest customers, it's a problem that fashion brands have to start to tackle somehow. Because in fact, as you said, if we talk about the youngest people, I see my nephews, they are playing all the time. They are watching on YouTube other people that are playing.
Mm.
And this is not something that, it's a kind of standards between, you know, people that are today 10, 12, 15 years old. This is how they are doing things. So why don't show your product there? You should.
Exactly.
But if it has a huge cost, if it takes a lot of time, if it requires an expertise that you don't have in your company, it's really difficult to ask senior leadership, give me 100K for this project. If this will be something that is feasible by your internal team, you can say, let's set up a small pilot project for this. We will need one person for 6 weeks to be able to create this capsule collection for this particular game, and it will cost us 10K. It's completely different discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the cost of putting today garments into metaverses and the lack of expertise, like technical expertise inside fashion companies, it's a huge roadblocker for Web3 solutions in fashion.
Yeah. Well, that's why it has to be kind of well structured in terms of a financial model. And leaders need to understand what the outcomes can be or will be, you know, very, very clearly, to make sure that it's viable and their core business function doesn't suffer because of it.
That's it.
I think Nike are claiming that they've been suffering with innovation because of their adoption of Artifact and Web3. I don't know. It's hard to judge without being inside the room, but they seem to have made good revenues from Web3 activations over the last 3 years. But they're clearly trying to move away or move back to their core business. And that's obviously a slight concern in terms of a barometer of the market, because if Nike do it, they've always led and other people will follow. And that could cause further issues within the innovation space within industry. I guess that's another topic. So I'd just like to thank you very, very much for joining me on Love Hate Automate today. Great to hear your perspectives and your commentary on the industry. How can our audience follow you and keep in touch with your activities?
I post quite often on LinkedIn, and I am always happy to talk with people. So you can follow me on LinkedIn. You can DM me on LinkedIn. I also have my Calendly open to have a short virtual coffee to know each other. I am super open to network with new people. Also, because I believe if we want to create a kind of community around fashion innovation, it will never become a mainstream. So let's make it mainstream together. Let's go it. Let's talk about these topics. Let's find the solutions.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree. That's perfect. What we'll do is we'll put all that information in the show notes to make sure that our audience can follow you and also join you for that virtual coffee. That's a great idea. So whether you're a creator, a builder, or a player in the digital world, have fun and enjoy being at the frontier of technology that is definitely changing the future. I'll see you next time on Love, Hate, Automate.